This is Percy Garner, Ohio native, second-round draft pick, podcast host, all-around great dude, and a member of the 2016 AL champion Cleveland Indians. And you're listening to the Selby is Godcast with TJ and Zach.
You're listening to the Selby is Godcast with Zach Meisel and TJ Zuppi.
Fly ball, deep right field. Back is Spencer at the one and two, get the ball.
Subscribe to Selby is Godcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Unbelievable.
Zach, I know you spent the last few hours trying to procure a... Well, can I even say? I don't want to say it. I want to spoil the surprise. What you've been
you
trying to do.
You know my wife is an avid listener. You cannot spoil
I'm not gonna say it. Surprise. I know you've been busy with that. However, have you paid attention to social media in the past 12 hours? Did you see Super Smash Brothers Melee in Venezuela, apparently, with Yasiel Puig? He says he's trying to play Peacekeeper, but we see the videos and... It's pretty wild, pretty crazy. But apparently he was trying to keep the peace, and then he gets sucker punched. And Yasiel Puig, I was getting flashbacks, and I know Chris Antonetti just probably shudders every time he even thinks about.
I knew you were the going fact here. That this is your favorite story.
Cleveland trades for Yasiel Puig, and 20 minutes later, he's fighting on the field. How is this happening? So that's what I had flashbacks to. Whether or not he started it or was trying to end it, I don't know. I wasn't there. I see the video, but that's what I remembered. Cleveland has had a couple of these sorts of trades where just the trade goes down, and then oddities take place. Ubaldo staying on the mound in Colorado, despite the fact that everyone in the park, including Ubaldo, knew he was about to get traded. And that went on for far longer than it should. And Yasiel Puig getting suspended before he even gets to Cleveland. I mean, what in the heck? Where else? The old saying, only in Cleveland. God, it applies.
Yeah, the Ubaldo one was... That was so unique and strange, right? We're all watching his outing on the mound. I think he needed 45 pitches to get through the first inning, and then that was it. And everyone was wondering, why are you even sending him out there? What a strange, strange evening that was. And then they didn't even finish the trade that night. Remember, we head back up to the press box. There's a press release sitting at everyone's desk, and it's a trade. They traded Orlando Cabrera, I think, to the Giants for Thomas Neal, maybe? There's your random player of the day.
But how about that?
But yeah, that's why a lot of front offices don't want to leak or announce anything until a player passes his physical, until the player is on the premises, because things can happen. It can be weird, and you're just like, I just imagine that the GM is texting the player asking for play-by-play. Did you board the plane yet? You don't have a peanut allergy, right? Are you off the plane? Did the door blow off the airplane? Are you okay?
Oh, God.
Did you have a window seat?
Oh, my goodness. I was thinking of the first season of Reacher when I read the Yasiel Puig tweet, because he tweeted afterwards, like, I'm trying to keep the peace. Someone comes up and blasts me, and what am I supposed to do? And I just keep getting thrown into these situations. And then everyone's tweeting out video of him involved in a fight. But I thought of the Reacher quote from season one, because he talks about trouble just finding him.
It's like me when I make a trade in fantasy football or Hardball Dynasty, and I'm getting the much, much better end of the deal from some new owner who doesn't know what they're doing, and everyone thinks that I ripped off this person. It's, hey, I don't know why these trades keep happening. It's just happenstance that it's always me on the winning end of these.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we didn't gather here today on the Selby is Godcast to talk about Yasiel Puig, but I did just see that, and that was the thing that was freshest on my mind. So we start in that area. We move forward here. I'm TJ. That's Zach. Thank you for being here on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you happen to catch us. If you are on YouTube, give us a subscribe. Give us a like. We're trying to get our subscribers up there so more people can hopefully find the show. And, of course, we always appreciate those of you that support the show over at Patreon and get that additional episode for $1 per episode. A lot of places we could start here. We have the Hall of Fame announcements. I don't have many thoughts on that, although I've seen my fair share of comparisons between players that are in and players that people think should be in. And the takeaway is always, this guy on the left shouldn't be in. And my takeaway is always, well, maybe just the guy on the right should be in. I've seen so many involving Kenny Lofton, and I don't want to open up that can of worms. Maybe we should. But I thought we could start with something that's been under the skin of Guardians fans. An outfielder signed a contract here recently within the past few days, a very affordable contract. Someone who I loved like 4 or 5 seasons ago would have died to have this man in a Cleveland uniform, to see him hit bombs at Progressive Field. Still not happening because he signed with the Nationals, Joey Gallo. Why do you think Cleveland passed on Joey Gallo for $5 million buckaroos?
It's like a game of let's make a deal. Behind door number one, you have Gallo, and you pretty much know what you're going to get from him at this point. And behind door number two, it's you open the door, and it's like opening the door to a house that's been flooded. All this water comes pouring out because there's Jonathan Rodriguez standing there and George Valera standing there and Will Brennan standing there. Jenkinsie Noel standing there. Like, do you know for a fact that none of those guys can produce what Gallo is projected to produce? And I think this team is in the mode right now where they're going to take the unknown commodities because they have to learn about them. And if you sign someone like Gallo, if you sign someone who is not a guaranteed improvement over what you have, then you're making the same mistakes you've made in the past with Domingo Santana and Carlos Gonzalez and players like that. So I said this last week, it's frustrating, and I get fans' dissatisfaction with this offseason, which that doesn't even, Gallo aside, that is very fair. Where I wouldn't be frustrated is when it's someone who like is maybe a league average hitter. You know, if you don't want to make the same mistakes you've made in the past. And the issue here that I said last week is, how did you get to this point? Like, you're not supposed to be holding auditions. You're supposed to, you remember what Terry Francona said after game 5 of the Yankees series? Like, he was like, hey, this was cool, but like this, you have to build on this. This has to be a springboard into whatever's next. And it wasn't.
And was now that you're before kind of back after to where somebody started. Asked who Francona was going to be rooting for in the next round, the team that beat him or the team that he's not facing?
So I think I understand wanting to get looks at these players you don't know, but it's just so they're in such a weird spot because on one hand it's like, okay, well, I don't want to sound like a broken record. I don't want to have the same conversations, but no matter where we start, we lead back to the same theses, because everything revolves around what is your goal in 2024? You know, keeping Ramon Laureano for $5 million tells me, okay, you like what he can give you in some role. That's a winning move. Because if you're just trying to learn about all your young players, Ramon Laureano is only going to take up space. You know, he's going to take at bats away from Rodriguez and Valera and Brennan and Noel. So it's just weird. Like, again, Straw is just, I understand what his skills are, but like, there are just better uses of time than watching him play because you need to learn about all these guys. And it's the same issue you're going to have at shortstop, which is, how do you learn about Arias and Rocchio and Brito and Freeman at the same time? I don't know how that works. So, like, the Gallo thing doesn't bother me at all because you have to learn about these guys. It's just, you shouldn't have been in this place to begin with. And the way this has all played out, like, if you rewound this to 2021 and said, you know, what's the goal here as you have this reset? It wouldn't be to be where you are right now. And that's the trouble here is like Gallo would have made more sense if you look at the pitching staff, you keep Bieber and you're like, okay, this is a team that they want to win the division and see what they can do. But then you need more than Gallo and they haven't done anything. Like if your only offseason moves were Hedges, Barlow and Gallo, like, that makes no sense to me. Take that money and go sign someone actually who's a substantial upgrade over what you have.
Right. It's pulling your cash together to get one thing that's going to last for a long time, that's going to give you exactly what you need. Or you don't spend that money and just spend a little bit all these different places trying to make it up in the aggregate. That's the comparison here. You know, I might have been on the fence about whether or not this would have been a big improvement or not, but then I went over to Joey Gallo's Wikipedia page. You know how Wikipedia works. The minute something goes down, that thing is updated like that, right? I mean, it's almost instantaneous. How does it work this? How does somebody go, I know what I need to do, go to that man's Wikipedia page and update it? It still says he is a free agent outfielder. If Wikipedia is not even rushing to update itself, then I guess it wasn't that big of an addition. Of course, I'm being a bit facetious here. The way I tried to think about this was, let's put this in the other direction. Let's say the Guardians had signed Joey Gallo. How would I feel about that move? I don't want to speak for you, but it wouldn't have done much for me.
No.
I would have had to have spent more time convincing myself why it makes sense, why I think it's a good move, than it was probably worth. Do you agree with that? Let's say they had signed him. Well, how would you feel about the move?
I would have felt it was an unnecessary use of limited resources. I mean, he's projected a 92 WRC plus by Zips, or 97, I guess. 97, a 182, 308, 401 slash line. Can you not get that from what you have? Even if it's a Brennan Laureano platoon?
Right, right.
Or a
That's
Florial
kind of where
something?
I was at. Now, there is still a scenario, perhaps, where he's getting back to being like a 120 WRC plus, in addition to hitting the home runs. Now, I think a lot of people just look at the home runs and say, Cleveland needs that. And look at his home run total for last year when he was not a great player. And look at the home run total of the entire outfield that you had. Yeah, it'd be nice to add that to the mix. But I'm less about getting caught up on power and how you get the offense instead of just getting the offense. Sure, you need power in this lineup and it makes you a little bit more dangerous. We're also talking about a guy over the past 2 years that struck out 40% of the... He's doing Mike Zunino stuff here as far as the strikeouts go. Now he's giving you the power. And he gives you enough power that he's still a league average bat despite the fact that over the past 2 years he's striking out 40% of the time. I mean, that in itself is a little wild. It speaks to how crazy the power still is. And I don't think that that's going away. I still think he's going to hit 20-plus bombs this upcoming year. But you see the projections, as you said, somewhere in the range of 97, 98 WRC plus. And also, we're also talking about a guy that what once out of the past 3 or 4 years has he been a difference-making player? If you just look at the past, from 2020 to 2023, he's got a 731 OPS, which is the definition of a league average bat. Could you have used league average in your corner outfield the past year? Sure. But your point is correct. If I can't get that from some of the guys that are already here, this is an organizational failure that goes far beyond Joey Gallo.
Yeah, he'd be fun as a bench bat on a good team. Like, you're down 3 runs in the 9th. You have 2 guys on. And you need to pinch hit for your catcher anyway. So you go to the guy who there's a 10% chance he hits a 3-run bomb. And a 40% chance that he strikes out. But you take that risk. You like those odds in that situation. That's the role that if I were running a team, I would want him in. And for $5 million in today's economic game, like, that's a reasonable price for that role.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah. I mean, you can look at his batting average and say he hasn't hit 200 since before the pandemic. And batting average does not mean much of anything, especially the type of hitter he is. But what it does do is
for him,
he walks so much, and yet his on-base percentage the last 2 years is still 280 and 301. So that's that's the thing, is it's just you he is the definition of three true outcomes, because you can truly boil down his at bats to, okay, 100% of his at bats, 40% of them are strikeouts, maybe 8 to 10% of them are home runs, and like 15% of them are walks. I mean, that's 2/3 of his plate appearances right there. It's crazy. That's not something that would get me frustrated. You know, if you want to talk about Jock Peterson, you know, I think he and Laureano could have been a really nice platoon, but then you're missing out on Will Brennan. Maybe you wouldn't have to miss out on Will Brennan if you didn't trade for Floreal and you didn't still have Straw. It's a mess. I think as we get closer to spring training and we start laying out like what our actual expectations are for this team, I think one of the top priorities is going to be just sifting through the clutter. And these are things that you were saying in 2021 and even before 2022, when we didn't know that team was going to be a contender. They haven't done that. And they've kind of cornered themselves into this situation. And it's what happens when you don't package prospects, you don't know who to evaluate, and you've such a crowd on the 40-man roster in years past that, like, keep in mind, they're at this position where we're like, how are you going to get all these outfielders to get enough reps to see if they're good enough and also maybe try to win? And never mind the fact that they traded Nolan Jones for an infielder and they traded Will Benson because going into spring training, they didn't think they had at-bats for him, and they didn't really, they liked Oscar Gonzalez more and Will Brennan more. So they've already gotten some of the clutter and they've been wrong about their evaluations of that, and they still have all these guys. So yeah, someone like Gallo isn't going to move the needle, and someone like Peterson might have, but it's just, what are your priorities for this season? And obviously finances come into play too.
But I don't think that's as much of a factor here as it just is the roster spot and who it takes away opportunities from. I feel okay about predicting a league average outcome for Joey Gallo again this year. But my point and your point about moving the needle here with someone like that, it doesn't mean that much. If you had brought that in, I wouldn't feel like, okay, at least you've got one of those outfield spots figured out. Now it's on to center field. No, I wouldn't feel that way at all. I would just say, okay, that's a guy that maybe gives you a better chance of doing what you still question the other guys could possibly do. And okay, some power, that's nice. And hopefully those home runs come at the exact right time. And they can. And they can. And I think this is a great move for the Nats, because you're in the situation like them. What you need to do is try to get an excellent first 3 months out of that guy and then drum up all the trade interest and then flip that guy. And then maybe if he's having a great year and the Guardians are the pitching staff is humming along and it's just like, oh my gosh, they could just use one bat. Go trade for that guy then at that point. But if you're setting up two scenarios for me, pick which one. To choose your own adventure here. I can go to the left path and I could say, here's Joey Gallo and I feel pretty good about you're going to get league average offense from that. Or I can look at these other guys and I'm going to answer some questions and I'm going to give some opportunities and I'm not going to put anybody in the way of like George Valera having a tremendous spring training. Well, then I could be begging for him to be kicking down the door to an opening day roster spot or something like that. I prefer the scenario where I'm going to look for 100 being league average here in OPS and WRC plus coming from somebody, or even in the aggregate of a lefty righty platoon like Brennan against the righties. It wasn't that bad last year against righties. And if you pair that with Laureano, you might be getting what you're getting out of Gallo, total offensive run creation from that. So I just would much rather not put anybody in the way of any of these younger guys, seeing if anybody is worth a damn in that outfield.
Let me ask you this. Which season do you think the Guardians will be more formidable? 2024 or 2025?
God, you love these questions.
But there's a method to the madness here.
I don't know. I don't have enough information now.
Okay. So I think these seasons are connected. I think you're going to be better in 2025 because you'll be another year into the Bybee, Williams, Allen triumvirate. They'll be more seasoned. They'll go through whatever sophomore season lumps they take this season. You know, you'll have a better handle on McKenzie's health. I like the
no Bieber,
the
another year older for Ramirez.
Yeah, but so on the position player side, though, but you'll have, like, I think Manzardo will be a middle-of-the-order hitter for you. And the big thing here, and the reason why I'm getting
might,
to this
that
is...
It might happen this year.
I think Chase DeLauder is one solution to your outfield in 2025. Maybe he debuts in 2024, but I think he is fully in the picture in 2025. And you assume Stephen Kwan will be. And so by that point, you have one outfield spot that is a black hole, let's say. So you have 1 year where you, at the bare minimum, just need one answer in the outfield. Can it be Floreal in center? Can it be Brennan in a part-time role? And then you can find someone to pair with him, whether it's Laureano for another year or someone else. Is it any of these corner guys, Rodriguez, Noel, Valera? That's why Gallo doesn't make sense this year. But you could convince me that in a year, when I have Kwan, when I have DeLauder, when I have someone or maybe none of these options, and I only have one spot to fill, and I have answers, the line of guys waiting for opportunities is shorter, then maybe it makes sense to go get that Gallo type. So he's a complementary piece to what you have when what you have is sufficient. He's not the answer to a question that is just a complicated riddle.
I think you're right, and how you got here is more important than just Gallo itself. If you are to the point where Joey Gallo is going to be a significant upgrade over what you have, you're already in it. You're already in trouble. And I'm hoping that somebody, whether it's Valera, whether it's DeLauder at some point this year, whether it is Brennan, Laureano, that combination, or Floreal, or Rodriguez, somebody get me close to like a 95 WRC plus. And if you do that, then the difference between what Gallo is going to provide more than likely in this is it's not that great. And maybe I'll have answered some questions along the way, and maybe we'll have even had some fun. You mentioned DeLauder. He was one of the 14 guys you said could debut this year. I didn't believe it. When you told me that you were putting out a story of 14 guys that could make a debut, I didn't believe it. I didn't think you could come up with that many names. But I read the article, and I gotta say, I think you're onto something. I think all of those guys have at least some chance to debut. So we have DeLauder, that's one. Do you want to tell us the other 13 and perhaps gauge how likely of an outcome that is?
Yeah, I ordered it from, I guess, least likely to most. But you could make some arguments, because some guys have some unique positions here too. Let's start at 14. Angel Martinez, who I feel like this is a big year for him. We haven't really talked about him. He's kind of a mystery to me. I don't know. I know there was a point in time, I can't remember if it was a year ago or 2 years ago. I want to say it was 2 years ago, where he was just internally getting so much hype. They put him on the 40-man before last season, but it's obvious why he ranks low on this list. You have Arias, Rocchio, and Freeman. I think there's two opening day roster spots for them. One of them returns to Columbus. Jose Tena, also at Columbus. Juan Brito, also at Columbus, who factors into this because Jimenez can slide over to short if you need him to. So he's on this list because Jose Tena debuted last year after Jose Ramirez got ejected after he laid out Tim Anderson. So it's possible that Martinez could debut in some capacity. He's gotten some outfield reps too, just to throw that in the repertoire. But, you know, he's been on the 40-man now for, this will be his second year, and he's at AAA. He's still young, but, you know, if you hit, you'll open some eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not going to take much to win somebody over, especially when you started from a place where internally, as you said, there was some initial belief. So like a little bit, like a crack of a hope, of a dream. might get that back pretty quickly. What are we going to say? Like scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most likely that we're going to see him, 1 being probably not. Is that fair? Is that what you envisioned?
I'd probably put him in a 2.
Yeah, I thought that initially. The problem is there's just so many other guys in the way. But could I see a doubleheader where they just call somebody up to be on the bench? I mean, Tana, I never would have in a million years thought we were going to see Tana last year. And we did.
He wasn't on my list last year. So, yeah.
I'm going to say, a 4. A 4. I'm going to leave the door open a little bit.
So, I know MLB Pipeline's been releasing their top 10 prospects at each position recently. Is it alarming to you that Cleveland has spent all this time stockpiling shortstops, building this farm system, and none of their shortstops rank in the top 10?
If you have 6 minor league shortstops, you have none. I mean, a little bit.
Now, it's possible, like, I don't remember if Tyler Freeman was on there a few years ago, because remember, he was at one point like a top 50 prospect. Rocchio's been top 100 guy. Arias has been a top. So maybe it's unfair to say, like, now none of these guys are in there, and Arias has played too much. Freeman probably too, so they're not, they wouldn't even be on the prospects list. But I'm talking
right.
Rocchio, Martinez, Tana, anyone
right.
lower in the system, like, none of them are on there.
Well, I think if Arias and Freeman were still able to be on these lists, I mean, I would imagine, I mean, certainly not Arias and Freeman shouldn't either. The fact that they're in the major leagues now, they would be, because just reaching the major leagues, you're going to be high on a prospect list because you've gotten over that hump. So they're already providing you some value, whether it's good, great, tremendous value, I don't know yet. So, I mean, that's fair to say that 2 of them have already made that jump. The other end of this is, I think it's more of a just making you feel better, like inside in your gut, just seeing the names there, seeing that other people evaluate them and think that they're great. Ultimately, does it matter? No, because as we've covered at length for years and years and years, Jose Ramirez was not on anybody's can't-miss prospect list, and here he is, and that happens all the time. So it's not the be-all, end-all. It just makes you feel, when you're looking at this and you're looking for reasons to feel great about the system, you're hoping, hey, isn't this guy great? Hey, over here, isn't this guy awesome? And you're just hoping that other people back up that feeling. So not seeing some of those names on the list, yeah, I think it does raise some red flags, I would say.
Number 13, Tanner Burns. Interesting case here. So he got the invite to big league camp. That helps you get on this list. Spent the last 2 years at AA. Last year, about midway through the season, he shifted to the bullpen. Numbers were pretty similar to what they were as a starter. And his numbers have been solid year after year. Walk rate's a little high. More just a case here of guy with experience in multiple roles. And kind of just fits in like that Curry, Gattis, Lively group. And I still wouldn't be shocked if they added some more options in spring training. You know, a veteran guy like Carlos Carrasco on a non-roster invite to big league camp and just see if someone has something and see if you can get them at the end of spring to agree to go to Columbus until you need help.
Man, Carrasco. You're so right about Carrasco. Like, I'm sitting here wondering, why hasn't that happened? It just seems so, if he's not going to get a big league job somewhere else, wouldn't you just come back to Cleveland where you loved it? I know different staff now, and there have been changes, and it's not like you're coming back to play with your old buddies or anything like that. But it would just seem, if you're looking for somebody that gives you just a little bit of insurance, and I think even if he's not starting, like, couldn't he help you out of the bullpen or something? Couldn't he be back in a multi-inning role of some kind on this team? I think that'd be some pretty great insurance. Anyway, sorry, didn't mean
his metrics were really rough last year. I remember he told me in Hoynesy wants to retire in Cleveland one day and said he'd keep pitching as long as his... The night he pitched when we were in New York, He was hitting like 94, 95. And he said, if he can keep doing that, he'll keep pitching. And then when he loses the velo, he said he'll quit. But his metrics were really good year after year before this past season. So was it just an injury thing? Was it just a blip on the radar? Does he still have anything left in the tank? Yeah. And it's a good feel-good
story. I'd like to know. And
if it's a minor league deal, there's no risk. But I think they'll add someone like that just to throw into the mix. Remember, they did it last year with Touki Toussaint and someone else. I can't remember who. So that wouldn't be surprising. But Tanner Burns, just because at some point, you know, you're going to need pitching and he can go either way. I don't know what they are planning for him yet, but it's possible. You're in big league camp. You got a shot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's actually pretty good. Most of these pitchers that are on your list, I don't think there's anybody that's less than a 6. Even this one, I would say, is a 7. Just because, guys, throughout the year, when you don't want to call up somebody that's like a premium prospect, but you need somebody, like the doubleheader days we're talking about, or somebody's got to come up and fill just this little gap. And so it's someone that you wouldn't mind whether you call them up and it's a short stint, or even in the case of, we might have to DFA this guy at some point later if we call him up, but it's just a victim of circumstance sort of thing. It happens all the time. So, yeah. Yeah, I think the odds are good. We could see someone like him this year.
Number 12, Chase DeLauter. I don't think there's a way for this to happen. You know, he's on here because he's a star prospect and they need people like him. So it's that simple. I would imagine he starts the year at Akron. I would imagine they don't make him stay there incredibly long. He was only there for a very brief time at the end of last season. And he thrived in 57 games. He had a 945 OPS. So, you know, he goes to AAA at some point. And if they have a deficiency in the outfield, which is certainly possible, and he's just tearing the cover off the ball in Columbus, then who's to say he couldn't debut at some point in August or September? I don't think it's likely, but maybe you tell me I'm wrong.
I would love to tell you that you're wrong, because that would mean he played like his pants were on fire. Just talking about kicking down the door, going like kicking down the wall. To do that, accomplish that in this organization. So that would mean some pretty great things if he did make that jump, I think. But it also suggests some maybe less pleasant things about everybody that was in front of him, because I think, like, is George Valera going to get an opportunity before him? At this point, I would say, yeah. What about Rodriguez? What about the guys that are already in the major league system, already on the major league team? All of those guys have to falter, get hurt, not produce. So a lot has to happen. I think that's like a two on my list. So it's not impossible, but slightly better than that.
All right, number 11, Daniel Espino. A little similar in that if he's going to make his debut, I don't think it happens until school's back in session. But this one's different because he's on the 40-man. And at some point, a guy with that stuff, you just have to say, come up here and throw. But it's going to be a while. You know, he's got to get off a mound. He's got to start this long rehab process back. And what's crazy is it's not even just the fact that he missed all of last year. He's thrown 100, since the end of the 2019 season, he's thrown 110 innings. So your best case scenario for him this year is like a very small workload. It's just surviving the season. He had 4 appearances. Oh, Siri says, I'm not sure I understand. Well, let me explain it. He had 4 appearances at AA in 2022. So I don't know like what's important. Like, does he need to go back to AA? Does he need to go to like, that's not even important to this conversation, because if he's got stuff remotely close to what he had before the injury, I'm not worried about whether minor league kids can touch his fastball or hit his slider or whatever. So I think the path to the majors for him is proving he's healthy, shaking off some rust, and then there's a spot in the bullpen in August and September, and he's got like 10 to 15 innings left. And so you just let him make 10 appearances for you at the end of the season in the bullpen just to get some experience. And then you use that as a springboard into his a normal offseason. And then you revisit what role makes sense for him in 2025.
Yeah, pitchers are so different from hitters in that hitters, organizations like to build up the plate appearances. And they think the hitter's getting stronger with more experience and just learning and working on adjusting to what the pitcher is doing and seeing them make adjustments. And it's just all beneficial. So that's why you see these young position player prospects slowly brought along. And, oh, well, they can't make the jumps just from Double-A, because that's a tough going from Double-A pitching to Major League pitching. That's a huge jump. And then there's the other end of the spectrum for pitchers, where it's the sand in the hourglass drains every pitch they throw. That's one fewer pitch they can throw the rest of the year. There's always a constant ticking clock, even for healthy pitchers, because everybody's got an end of the line here. You're not going to push somebody past whatever the inning total is somewhere in your brain. And so that's, you know, the young pitchers, they don't need to face lots and lots of different guys because they're setting the tone. It's all a matter, here's my stuff, can you hit it? It's not the other way around with the hitters where they got to react to the stuff. So that's why I'm with you. I think if he's proving himself healthy, there's a 5 on this scale of being able to come up and help the major league team at some point. At some point,
5's a little higher than I'd go, but he's such a unique case. Part of it is, when does he start actually getting in games? Because it could be a scenario where they just shut him down once he reaches a certain threshold. Or if he doesn't get in games until later in the season, is there enough time to really refine your stuff to get up to major league level? Are they in contention? A lot of factors there. I'd probably put it lower than 5, but that's probably the toughest one to gauge here. All right, next is a group of 3.
I might be biased just a little bit by just my desire to see it happen.
I know.
Come on. Let me just will this into existence.
He was supposed to be an ace by now. He was supposed to be throwing 200 innings with 260 strikeouts in 2024, not 25 innings at Double-A.
Why are you not Garrett Cole yet? Oh, my God. It's taking so long.
All right, we've got 3 right-handed relievers. Tyler Thornton, Franco Aleman, and Cade Smith. How are you sorting through this trio?
I don't know. I'm just going to say 6.5 for all. I don't know. I don't know how to sort between them, but it's the same thing applies that we were talking about with Burns. Yeah, anybody that separates themselves even a little bit can make a debut. Of course that can happen.
Smith is the
I saw Tanner Tully. Tanner Tully uniforms. Yes, this could happen.
I forgot to tell you this. A fan he's a local sports writer, but listens to our podcast, I think. Brought me at Guards Fest a card with both Kirk McCarty and Tanner Tully on it.
Wow.
To which I said,
it's pretty incredible.
Why was this made? It is invaluable to me and only me.
I've got sports cards with you and my faces on them. So yeah, these things get made. Why was that made?
Even my 1-year-old didn't think that the card of his dad was cool. I gave him one. I said, hey, why don't you put this in your room? And he said, no.
Put this in my bike.
Cade Smith he could be the first reliever called upon at some point. I would think the odds of him debuting this year are a 9 or a 10 on your scale. Pitched for Team Canada last year, had a decent year. The ERA wasn't great, but like if you look at the actual numbers and the stuff, like he's ready. 95 strikeouts in 62 innings, I believe. On the 40-man roster in big league camp, like he'll get a shot. I mean, it's not impossible for him to make the opening day roster as that last bullpen guy.
True. Yeah, checking all the boxes there of a guy that you're going to see soon. No doubt.
Alemán, like, something clicked when he went to Akron last season. 24 innings, zero ERA, stopped walking people, strikeouts were sky high, didn't give up hits. Good formula, in my opinion. He got the invite to big league camp, so that's confirmation that they're paying it. You turn their heads. You know, guys who ended the season in double A, it's always a question of how quickly, like if you're going to start at double A, how quickly can you get to triple A? If you're starting at triple A, how quickly can you just build off of what you already did? So it's a little tricky there just because he still has another level to climb. But certainly when you're a reliever, it's as simple as just put up numbers. Thornton, that was a little creative license because he didn't get a big league camp invite, but the stuff is really interesting. Funky delivery, tons of movement on the fastball. And I think he had 79 strikeouts and only 23 hits allowed. So that's a pretty crazy ratio. He ended last season at double A, and it's the same thing. You know, if he starts at Akron, can he get to triple A quick? And then you're on the radar. And with the bullpen too, like I'd say Smith is a 9 or a 10. I'd say the other two guys are probably lower, like 4 or 5 maybe, but only because this bullpen has guys who are making money, and it's going to be like, it's tough for me to envision Henchus getting sent down or Stefan getting sent down or Barlow going anywhere. You know, you need like,
but that's
injuries,
not all that,
probably.
Yeah. That's not all that leads to those opportunities. It's the injuries. It's the double headers. It's the, hey, we play with one fewer position. Well, I guess those restrictions, but you know, there are other ways where relievers make their way onto the team, even in brief stints. So yeah, that's why the door is always open for somebody like that.
Next group. It's the three outfielders. John Kensie Noel, George Valera, Jonathan Rodriguez. I basically just said, you know, I think you can separate the three relievers. You can rank them. These three outfielders, I don't know if you can really, like, I'd put Noel as the least likely of the three, but to me, it's really as simple as if any of them are scorching hot, call them up. Unless your outfield is thriving, I don't foresee that. So it's really just on these guys. Like the opportunity, it's the opposite of the bullpen. The bullpen, you have 7 guys who are pretty much guaranteed spots. There's one opening, and it might go to a guy who can throw multiple innings, so those guys might not even be part of that conversation until the middle of the year. With the outfield, you know, if one of those outfielders is just destroying the baseball and showing improved habits and maybe swing changes that are beneficial, who's stopping you? Right? Like, they need hitters. So to me, it's hard to say exactly individually where they'd fall on your scale. I think just collectively as a group, it's high. Like, you'll definitely see one or two of these guys, if not all three, at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's like that, if you're telling me one of these three, then it's like a 9 for me. I think at some point, for sure. If you're separating them, then yeah, Noel is clearly separating himself from those other two. I think he's just a little bit further down. But I also feel like you're onto something where just some improvements for him, because he has the power. It's just nothing else went along with it this past year that enabled the numbers to look good. But if you just focused on the home run total, you'd say, yeah, this guy should absolutely be in the mix for even, I mean, forget some point of the year, maybe even opening day. should be in the mix for that. But just there wasn't enough to go along with that. But if he shows some improvements early in the year, because he's got this big hulking body type, I think it's easy to dream on getting him to the big leagues at some point with those other improvements. But that's going to be on him. Valera, I mean, God, I part of why I don't want a guy like Gallo here or any of the other veterans that we've talked about that are just not clear upgrades over what you have is I want, give this dude the opportunity, even if he's not all world at AAA, just this colossal, putting up colossal numbers at AAA, give him the opportunity at the major league level. Can we just freaking see it at some point? Because we've been hearing about him for 4 years, realistically, and thinking about him in the major leagues, like for the last two at least. I just want to see it. Give him the chance. Give him the opportunity. So if he's just even solid at AAA and nobody is lighting the world on fire at the major league level, I want to see Valera. Just give him the chance. Give him the opportunity, and let's see what he does. At some point, don't you just have to do that? Let's see what you do with your chance.
Yeah, it's nobody just else the question is figuring it. Out what needs to happen before that can happen. Does Brendan have to fail first? How long of a leash does Floreal get? Is there anything... I rag on him a lot. But is there anything Miles Straw can do to wrestle back some playing time? Do you owe it to him because of the salary to give him that opportunity? Can Laureano, how much do you want to lean on him? And then, is it as simple as whichever of those three guys is hitting the best at AAA, they get the first call?
I mean, it might be. I mean, it's going to be some process-oriented stuff. It's not just sorting by OPS here, but I mean, kind of feels that simple. And Rodriguez, too. He's demonstrated the power. He had the solid numbers to back it. I mean, better than solid numbers to back it up at AAA this past year. So why not give them the runway? Let them prove to us what they are. Show us what you are. It was the same thing with Oscar Gonzalez. Show us what you are. You've had some success at the major league level even. Show us what you are over a little bit more extended period. And it looked like he kind of did. And so, okay. Now you're on to the next one. Give another guy, like Rodriguez, like Valera, give them the at-bats. That's why I don't want anybody in their way, because I just want them to play. I want them to play, and I want them to show us who they are.
Number four, Juan Brito. He should debut. I don't know how you get there. That's the tricky part. I think the biggest thing for him is, I think there's power potential in there. I'm not saying he's going to be a huge slugger in the big leagues, but I think he could hit 15 home runs. And I think the big thing going for him is the walk to strikeout rate. Like, he is the hitter. Like, he can make contact, and also, I mean, he had 31 doubles in 127 games last year. Like, it's not just bloops and BABIP fortune and all that. He's drawing a lot of walks. The on-base percentage mm-hmm. will be there, and there's some slug. And if you can get that from an infielder on this team, you know, like, he is what they would dream of Tyler Freeman being. He is what I think Kwan obviously has, the elite contact ability, and but they'd love if Kwan could access his power the way Brito started to last year. Like, there's so much to like with Brito. He's really intriguing. I don't know what that ends up looking exactly like at the major league level. And the big thing is, I don't know where he plays. Second base is his home. You know, if you could say on opening day, like, we're going to put Jimenez at short and we're going to put Brito at second, and then you have no way of knowing about Arias or Rocchio or Freeman, and that's that. And if Brito would take off and never look back, you'd be fine with that. But I don't think that, you know, I think Brito's going to start the year at AAA. And then how, like, what is it that gets them to say, okay, Jimenez, you cool with switching to short midseason? Brito's going to come up and play. Like, does Brito go somewhere else? This is a tricky one to me. So I think he debuts. Mm-hmm. I would put it at a 7 or an 8, but I don't know exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, I thought 7 too. The shortstop part, how you get there, fascinating in that if it's Arias getting the first shot, he's got to falter. Does that mean Rocchio gets a shot at shortstop before Abrito would? If Rocchio takes the best of what he accomplished this past year and adds that to what he was doing before 23, do you give him the shot at shortstop and keep Jimenez there? And then how long is that? How long is that leash? So how do you eventually arrive at moving Jimenez over to the other side of the diamond? I don't think Freeman's going to alter that too much, but the other two absolutely will. Arias and Rocchio, how do you get through them? How much time do you need with Arias to see holding those everyday spots is just not worth it? He's a major leaguer, but he's better served as a bench bat guy that's going to play short, going to play first, going to play right field for us. And he's not the long-term shortstop here. And then how fast is it with Rocchio? Don't you have to give him like several months of everyday at-bats before you even start to scratch the surface of knowing what they're going to be at the major league level? The answer is yes, of course. Duh.
Rocchio's the weird one, because it always seemed like he was the heir apparent to Lindor. And then Rosario came in, and it was like, okay, Rosario's going to be the placeholder until Rocchio's ready. Like, Rocchio just turned 23. I don't think there's anything he could do this year where you would just write him off. He's too young. Brito is going to spend the 99% of the season at the age of 22. These guys are so young still. There's so much to learn. So it's tough. The thing that, like, Brito having such good, whatever it is, plate discipline, pitch recognition, just whatever, gives him a really encouraging floor. Because as he gets older and bigger and stronger and wiser with more experience, that will help. Like that, then the other stuff's easy. And I think with Rocchio, I felt like I knew the path he was on. And then last year, the power disappeared. The walk to strikeout rate improved greatly, but then it was like, they already have that hitter. Like, they have Tyler Freeman's and Stephen Kwan's, and I just don't know, like, what type of hitter he wants to be. He's been crushing it in winter ball. Not so much power-wise, although the doubles are there, small sample and all that. So I don't know, like the contact gains would be great. The patience at the plate would be great if he was also still hitting for power, and that would make him the complete package. And if he was showcasing that, then I would say I'd rather see him than Arias, but I just have no idea like what type of hitter Rocchio wants to be or can be. And he's just such a mystery to me. These are good problems to have if these guys still had trade value because you hadn't like cycled through them so many times and spun your tires.
Yeah, I mean, a guy like Rocchio would still have trade value.
Sure, but maybe not as like much as you would have had ago.
2 or 3. Right, exactly. And with Rocchio, when I'm talking about taking the best of what you're talking about with the strikeout to walk, the 11% walk rate is much higher than any other point. And then the strikeout rate comes down this past year. So it's 11% walk, 12% strikeout. Okay. And I think we had the conversation at some point last year. Was it the organization trying to implement these sorts of things within him, and it just leaned way too much into it? If you're looking just at the ISO, it wasn't like a 141 ISO this past year compared to like the previous year. He was at a 166 and 153 at AA and AAA. So it dropped off, but it wasn't like he went from 200 to 100.
So, but we're not talking about a guy, someone of his age, like even a little drop off or like a moderate drop off is just a little concerning, because you should be, like, we saw with Lindor and Ramirez, like, those guys got it. It's what I'm saying with Brito. You get to an age where it's, you know, you can make contact. So then you start taking more aggressive swings and you can hit for
more
power.
Well, I think that's,
and you could,
I think that's what makes it more interesting, is because if that had happened, the power had disappeared, but it didn't coincide with anything else changing, then you'd go, what happened here? Well, the thing that makes him still somewhat intriguing to me is that there was additional changes to the offense. So that to me appears like a tangible thing. You were maybe swinging less recklessly and trying to be more judicious in what you were swinging at, but maybe you still leaned into that too much. Maybe you were too passive. Maybe you let some of the pitches that you could absolutely crush go by because you were focused on patience and just thinking about your swing. So maybe 24 could be the season where he takes some of those additional power gains that you were hoping for and adds that to some of the discipline that you hoped that he was instilling within himself in 23. You and I don't know that. The organization doesn't know that. And I think you're right in that he has to figure out, how do you want to succeed? Do you want to be the high contact guy? You probably can succeed being that, but is that your best outcome? I don't know. But still, I don't want to flush just what he could be completely, because he was a league average bat with 25 stolen bases this past year. Like, there's some good there. There's still some good there. Can you be the guy that just hits 15 home runs, steals 25 bases, plays very good defense at shortstop, hits a lot of doubles? Because that's a valuable player. That's a good player.
And to contradict something I said earlier, I'm good at that. We do spend a lot of time saying, like, oh, there's going to be a competition, and like, who's going to stand out? How are you going to learn about all these guys? Rocchio is still very intriguing. There are things that are really intriguing about Arias, and if he can just not be Cam Gallagher against left-handed pitching, that could be a good player. I will die on this hill. I think Tyler Freeman can be a good major league hitter. I mean, there are things to like about these guys. I'm pretty high on Brito. Like, I know none of these guys are on, and some have graduated, but, you know, they don't have shortstops on the top 10 list, or these guys' trade value has fallen off, and I get that. And they have botched this process. We shouldn't still be talking about an open competition for shortstop in 2024 when you spent 7 years stockpiling shortstops. But I think there's a lot of potential with this group still. I don't know how you're going to divvy up playing time to get solid answers on everybody. And if multiple guys pop, I don't know how Arias and Rocchio would both pop, but I also know that there doesn't seem to be room for both of them to play regularly, and that's before you get to Brito and Freeman. That's the issue here. But, like, I'm really, really curious and intrigued to see what Rocchio can develop into. And I think the same goes for Arias. The same goes for all of these guys.
Well, I think the scenario you're talking about with them both popping is, let's say Arias is, I don't know, we're halfway through May, and he's got a 105 WRC plus, and he's playing outstanding shortstop. And then Rocchio's down at AAA, and he's got a 125 WRC plus. And is looking, like, what is the line where you want to make the switch just because you think, even if Arias is fine, that Rocchio might be a little bit better? How can that even happen this year? If things are just kind of progressing along swimmingly and Arias kind of looked solid at that shortstop position, at what point do you make the switch there? How do you decide to do that?
That's for the rookie manager who's younger than you to figure out.
I know. I know. It all works itself out in the end.
And that wasn't even the most complicated one on this list. Number 3, Davison De Los Santos. He won't turn 21 until June. He had a Jekyll and Hyde year at AA. They already have Naylor and Manzardo, and anybody can play first base. But he's a Rule 5 pick, so you know they like some things about him. And yeah, he's
already sort of on the major league roster now, so
He's either on it or he's out of the organization. So where do you put him on your scale? Yeah.
Well, aren't they going to know, to some degree, aren't they going to know if those swing changes, swing decision changes, anything that he has done that we pointed to when they selected him in the Rule 5, if that was sticky from last year to this year, if some of that still is there, that they like the changes that he's made? And if that's the case, when they're seeing him up close in spring training, if they think that that has carried over, he's going to keep that major league spot.
So we're talking about how you can't shut the door on these shortstops who are 22, 23 years old. This guy's 20. He's 20. He might be yeah. 5 years away from breaking out. So how close does he have to be to that player? How much of his potential does he have to realize in spring training 2024 for you to give him a roster spot right away? Can you survive all the growing pains he's going to go through this year? Like, even if he spent the entire season on the roster, isn't he more likely to spend next season at AAA anyway? This is such a weird spot. But you knew all of this going in. Like, he only would have made your list of potential players to select in the Rule 5 draft if you already had to think through all of this. So I don't know. I don't know what he can prove to you in spring training that's going to sway you one way or the other. I think you already know what you like about him. And I don't know. Like, what's he going to do? Is he going to, like, maybe you picked him because you like the swing changes. Does he just forget how to hold a bat? So you're like, oh, never mind. Back to Arizona.
Yeah, sure. If you want to simplify it to that level, but you know what I'm saying? If the things that they saw in the swing path and just seeing him up close, you're going to get a better understanding of whether or not that was a real thing or just a coincidence. I also think they picked a player because of what his skill set is. He's a lottery ticket late in the game. The power is still going to be there, even if he hits 150 in doing it. He's on the bench because you're trailing by 3 runs. Here's your chance to maybe tie the game with one swing.
No, they have Joey Gallo for that.
And to his benefit, because of the platoon here, he could factor in that way against lefties, because you have a couple of guys that could use the platoon partner. Manzardo at some point could use the platoon partner if you're scared about overexposing him against left-handed pitching. I still think the odds are good that he's going to make this team. I think I'll put it at an 8.
I have no idea. I tend to agree with you, but your expectations, just, you have to be willing to just eat it. Like, it's so unfair for him to have to be put in that position. I mean, I'm sure he wouldn't complain. You get to be in the big leagues, earn a paycheck.
No, definitely not.
But it's such a weird, like, the Rule 5 draft is good because it gets guys opportunities, but it's also tough because it can really mess with you. Like, they're forced to rush his development so much quicker than they would have. And to spend a year in the majors and then go back to the minors and then try to get back to the majors. It's just, what a mess.
You don't think the Rule 5 is not really supposed to help players like him, you don't think? It's the guys that are 25 in an organization that they're blocked, and that's who you envision getting that opportunity, not the 20-year-old that could be wasting away on the bench. I think you'll see how much they believe in their hitting staff the way that it's now constructed, and they've made some changes there on that staff too, that is there still development that can be done? Is it more beneficial, or is it just beneficial enough to just be working with major league hitting coaches every single day, to be working and being acclimated to major league data every single day, to be seeing major league pitchers every single day and learning and absorbing from other hitters around you? Does that still hold a role? Is that, can that accomplish anything close to just getting the at-bats? Can this organization simulate in any way regular at-bats for this kid in non-game situations? Is that possible? We're also talking about a team that made Gabriel Arias disappear for, what, 2.5 weeks this past year when they were working on things, and we didn't see Gabriel Arias at all, but he was still on the big league roster. They made that work somehow. So could they do it for an entire season with De Los Santos if they like the kid enough? Yeah.
Number two, Joey Cantillo. I think he'll debut. He's intriguing. Added a couple ticks to the fastball like that. He's always been a strikeout guy. The changeup has been his best pitch. There are some walks issues. Big thing for him was just being healthy last year, 119 innings. He's another guy who, like, maybe it's as a starter, maybe it's multi-inning reliever. I don't know what the role ultimately is, but just think, work out some kinks at AAA and you can get a shot in the big leagues. Pretty simple.
You always want a guy to be a starter if they can, but I'm also thinking about, like, damn, Sam Henches is awesome in that short inning role, coming in throwing 97 with lethal secondary stuff. Could that be Cantillo too? I don't know. That would be a scenario where he's proven enough to get him up to the major league level. A, great, and B, your major league starting staff doesn't need the help, and so that's also a good thing if he's somehow doing that at some point this year. I mean, I thought the odds were pretty good that he would have made the debut in 23. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I'll still keep that high in 24. Did you put a number on it? It's half paying attention.
8.
Yeah, I'll go 7.5.
Okay.
I was thinking 7, and then you said 8, so I split the difference.
Well, I didn't know we could do decimals.
I already did one. You're not paying attention either. It's fine. We're an hour and 10 minutes into the show. No one's listening at this point.
And if Cantillo debuts, we can finally grade the Mike Clevenger trade.
Finally. Yes, it's the most important thing.
Number one.
Ready for number one.
Is Doug Nikhazy. No, it's Kyle Manzardo. And the only question is when. Is it opening day? Mm. Is it a couple weeks into April when magically he's ready for the big leagues and they gain an extra year of service time maybe? Is it in June?
Yeah.
After the Super 2 deadline?
By the way, it's such a great... The way they have this set up is so great that based on the evaluations of people outside organizations that are writing for outlets, could be the chance to get an extra pick or not get one, depending on making the opening day roster or not. It's this Stephen Kwan thing again, because, oh, Stephen Kwan wasn't evaluated to be a great... They hold that against the team when they're doing the right thing by putting the major league play, by putting the young kid on the major league roster like they did with Kwan, and yet you don't get any sort of draft pick compensation because the almighty lists, the can't miss list, they all said that this guy's not a top 100 prospect, so you're not doing the right thing with it. That is such a weird way to go about giving a team incentive for putting the guy on the roster.
Can you imagine Victor Wembanyama not debuting until like January 11th? Just so the Spurs could gain an extra year of control of him? Like, what is... I have never understood this in baseball. Imagine like CJ Stroud wouldn't have started this year until week 4. And not because he wasn't ready, just because that's the archaic system the NFL has to gain an extra year of contractual control.
Hey, I think they've made some strides in making some incentives for teams to put them on the major league. Or it's not even just a good incentive. There are negative incentives tied to this, too. You don't want a guy like we just saw with Tanner Bibee. You're going to finish high in rookie of the year, so you're going to lose that year of service time anyway. So just put him on the major league roster. I mean, we've covered this at length with Manzardo. But based on the evaluation of top 100 prospect lists, could also be the positive side of that. To me, that needs to be redone. I think you should just be looking at who are the top five players in a team's organization. If one of those players starts the year on the why does it have to be a top 100 prospect? What if the team doesn't have a top
100? Can we just get rid of the extra year of control?
Are we saying that the prospects that are not?
Can we have our best players playing on opening day? Opening day is a holiday. People are paying attention. Why don't you showcase the talent in the sport? People love prospect lists.
If they're a top 100 prospect.
Like, top 100 lists have become the new mock draft in football. It's great for the sport. It brings attention and discussion to the young upcoming stars. That's awesome. And those come out in February and March, and we talk about them, and then we don't talk about them again until the prospect gets called up randomly on April 23rd or on June 17th. It is so inane. Just give teams the incentive to put the best players on the roster on opening day. Just stop with the extra BS. And we don't need to take one rule that exists for some stupid reason and add a bunch of other rules to counteract that rule. Just get rid of the rule. Just put your best players out there on opening day and let them play 162 games in the major leagues. The end.
I mean, so Manzardo could be the 101st best prospect in baseball according to three different lists, and you wouldn't get a draft pick if you did the right thing and started the year with him on the major league team and he ends up winning awards or is in the voting at the end of the year. That
to me
is
crazy.
And what's
the difference between 100 and 101? Like,
that's
what separates
I mean.
Those players?
Nothing. Right. Nothing. Absolutely nothing separates these players. So I got to be rooting for him to be on all the top 100 lists. Uh-oh, he wasn't on this one, so I got to hope he's going to be on the other two. It's silly to me.
Conflicts of interest.
Why isn't it? I mean, why can't it be any prospect, but especially the top five for any team? What? But even that it's still the same thing. What's the difference between the fifth best prospect and the sixth best prospect?
Anyway, that's
can the Guardians just do the right thing? Just do the damn right thing and put the kid on the roster, and then I don't have to worry about this anymore.
So 2 years ago, they had 17 debuts. Last year, it was 8. It was the 3 rookie pitchers and then 5 guys who played small roles. How many do you think this year? If I set the over-under at 7.5?
I'm going to take the over.
I would too.
Because I was thinking 8 or 9. So, yeah, I'll take the over.
I agree.
Like, time limits on this show. Also, setting it...
Always take the over.
Always take the damn over. I hope people, when they filled out the surveys that we sent out for our Patreon supporters, I hope they looked at the question about ideal show length and there was ever a time that it said less than 55 minutes. I hope they just laughed. You morons will never be able to finish a show in less than 55 minutes.
We just have too much fun.
We'll see you middle of next week. Got some traveling going on, so we'll see you middle of next week. Look for that over at patreon.com/selbyisgodcast. See you.